gentlemen, we're in the Delaware Valley. Welcome to the Legal Show here on WWDB Talk 860. We are sponsored by BridgeMed Legal. Did I get that right?
Yes, sir.
Fantastic. We have an awesome show. Of course, I want to bring Larry Schreiber into the broadcast for making it happen. How are you, sir?
Fantastic, specifically after the Big Birds win yesterday.
Oh, my God. And absolutely. So we actually went to South Philly to watch the game, and it was like a packed house, and, you know, it would have been devastating if it would, you know, 2 yards. I mean, just ridiculous. But let's do this. We're going to bring the whole team in to talk about it. Happy to bring in Jeff Stanton of HGSK, Haggerty, Goldberg, Schleifer, and Cooper Smith. How are you, sir?
Doing well. Thanks for having me.
It's our pleasure. And of course, and let me set this up by saying it's not the one you're thinking. Thank God. Of course, happy to bring into the program Ben Simmons of Defino Law Associates. How are you, Ben?
I'm doing great, Joe. Good to see you again.
It's a pleasure. Ben's no stranger to the broadcast. Okay, so you know, we're going to spotlight some great professionals here, but before we do, we're going to talk a little sports. Okay, it's Tuesday, and of course, we're still reeling over the Eagles' victory on Sunday, and we made it interesting, man. I mean, you know, it's certainly, I mean, but it's a win over Dallas, and we needed that win badly because we have what? I mean, the next four games are against the 85 Bears, the 73 Dolphins. I mean, we got the craziest schedule ever.
That we do.
And so, around the horn, everybody introduce yourself, a little bit about yourselves, and then we'll get into the sports conversation. Ben Simmons?
Sure. Ben Simmons. I'm a plaintiff's attorney. Largely, I do medical malpractice and civil rights litigation. We do criminal defense work also. Defino Law Associates, we're a South Philly neighborhood law firm, so we do basically everything. I mean, there are certain things, tax and whatnot, that we'll send out elsewhere, but, you know, we like to try to help people out. If you walk into the office, we can take care of whatever you need. So,
awesome. Fantastic. And Jeff, if you will.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. Jeff Stanton. I'm a partner at Haggerty, Goldberg, Schleifer, and Cooper Smith, HGSK Lawyers, offices all throughout Eastern Pennsylvania. We're an injury law firm. My particular specialty is really insurance coverage, insurance bad faith. Get a lot of my cases from other attorneys that kind of run into some problems with an insurance carrier and are unable to resolve that, and that's really what we specialize in.
Fantastic. My good friend, Larry Schreiber, a little bit about yourself and your business.
Hi, how are you doing, everybody? My name's Larry Schreiber. I've been in the medical space for close to 30 years, but I just started this company, Bridge Med Legal, where we bridge the gap between attorneys and medical treatment for their clients.
And having said that, gentlemen, you know, let's talk a little bit. You know, we workers' comp and work injuries at football, NFL football, that covers that, right? I mean, in other words, there's that, you know, if you're injured in, you know, in a pro sport, it's you would imagine that it could be a legal case, right?
Sure.
I don't see you know, Jalen Hurts or Dallas Goedert, you know, filing for, you know, workers' comp. But having said that, let's go around the horn a little bit. Real excited about the 8-1 start, all right? And boy, did we need that victory, you know, especially, you know, with the four games we have coming up. You know, the Dallas bookending both of them, right? My main particular issue, and it's funny because they talk about Philadelphia sports, right? It's the thrill of victory and the agony of reading about it the next day in the paper, right?
Well, I like how you said reeling after our win yesterday. Yeah. I love it. Philadelphia's the only city that reels after a win.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's Dallas week.
Well, and Dallas week is awesome. We've had a lot of inconsequential games, right? Like, you know, New Year's Eve, what was Christmas Eve? We had already made the playoffs in Dallas, you know, in 2017. The 6-0 Dallas, the loss that we was one of the biggest waste of time in a history. I mean, literally speaking. Mm-hmm. However, I mean, it was great to have an important game between the two of us in the middle of the year and, of course, in Philly. You know, we're 8-1, and it's been the oddest 8-1 ever. Like, I mean, you know, we've had some... My main issue, you know, so offensive coordinator, my opinion, not the most creative or we're not throwing a lot of, you know, deception or anything like that. And I'm concerned about that because I'm thinking, you know, how long can we keep this thing going? I mean, you know, you have A.J. Brown making catches that no other wide receiver could make. I mean, he's 6'3", and he's like 235. Okay, but they weren't like like there's not a lot of misdirection around like that's just like, you know, I'm beating you, and that's just the way it is. Just concerned.
Yeah, I agree with you. My biggest concern is that I don't think he's original in any of his play calls. He went away from the run, which I really have a hard time understanding due to the fact that we were running all over, you know, God's creation.
Everybody,
for the
right.
first few weeks. I do understand that our offense, as far as passing goes, our passing attack has been more on point since that time. But I'd like to see more of a balance.
Well, I do think this, and I'm not trying to answer my own point, in that, I mean, Hurts being injured is a problem. We can't do the run, you know, the RPO run-pass option is real difficult when your quarterback clearly is running only when he has to run.
Yeah, he's really favoring that one leg. I mean, it's obvious when you watch him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, he's exactly. And that
and you don't get anything in the press conference about it, but you can see it on the field.
Well, it's amazing, the press conference, because, you know, he said so little. Like, we have to – you know, keep improving. We got to grow. We keep saying we got to grow, right? I mean, not saying anything. And I guess I can appreciate that. I don't care as long as we're winning. If it makes him feel good and he doesn't want to give anything away.
That was kind of funny, though. He hinted at it yesterday, though. He was like, he's not terribly candid. You know, he kind of glosses things over and smirks a little bit when people ask him about his knee and all that. But he did say selfishly, this bye week couldn't come at a better time.
Yeah.
You know?
I'll be honest. I absolutely think that.
For not just him.
Oh, yeah. Fair. I mean, they just got to regroup a little bit. Like you said, we got four of the best teams in the league coming up. You know, we're coming off a relatively weird schedule coming up to it. But I mean, I think a lot of these teams that we were playing in the beginning part of the season, it's that part of the season where you still don't really know who is good yet. You know, and we wound up having harder contests against teams that we weren't really expecting it from. But then you play Miami, who's supposed to be one of the best in the league, and we walked away with it.
Yeah.
It was
shut them down.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm convinced that a fairly decent JV football team from, you know, at any one of the high schools in the region, if they put the Washington football team or Commanders uniforms on, could give us a game. You know what I mean? Like, they give us fits, man. I mean, yeah. And they're not bad. Don't get me wrong. They're a tough team. But, you know, certainly they gave us all we could handle. And we're winning football games, and we should be happy about it. And of course we are. But the reason I wanted to win yesterday, besides the fact that it was Dallas right? Yeah. Of course, right? But was the fact that we have four crazy games left.
Sure.
I mean, they're all going to be crazy, but we have four crazy games coming up. And does anybody know who we play after Dallas? I'm wondering. If
you mean towards the end of Murderers Row?
Right. Exactly. Exactly. I'm wondering who.
No clue.
Well, because the reason I say that is I'm wondering if it's Seahawks. Okay, I was going to say Matt. When do we play Washington again?
We played them twice.
Oh, we played them twice.
We haven't played New York yet.
Oh, it feels like
we got to play New York twice. We still got to play Dallas.
Okay.
Twice. Yeah.
And you got to wonder what the Giants. You know, I mean.
Yesterday was costly though. Dallas Goedert, 4 weeks. I mean, coming into this stretch, he does a lot off the ball. I mean, that's going to be tough.
So absolutely. He's out 4 weeks.
4 weeks. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Surgery today, I think.
Forearm. Yeah.
Okay. So.
Although Daniel Jones, he tore his ACL yesterday, didn't he? Yeah.
Yeah.
So who knows what New York's going to be.
Okay, I didn't get the news. I was asking, my wife, I was saying to Alexa, what's wrong with Dallas Goedert, right? You know, she's going, the Goedert school, she's giving me information. And then she gave me information on an old injury, right? But that's actually better news than I thought. Like, in other words, you know, if we can hold the fourth down, he's back in 4 weeks, or is he missing four games?
4 weeks. Okay, I think he might miss 2 to 3 games.
Okay.
That's one of the weird things about the NFL. A fracture is better than, you know, you got a muscular ligamental thing going on, you know, like a ligament tear or something like that. That'll put you out for the rest of the season. But a fracture, you cast it and you can get back to it.
Absolutely. So that actually is good news. And one of the big problems, obviously, in all pro sports is, you know, injuries. So, you know, you don't, no matter what you're you're looking at, I mean, the Giants.
They're a train wreck.
Yeah, I mean, and they just paid
With a smile on my face, by the way.
Yeah. They just paid Jones how much money? Like hundreds?
40-something million a year?
A year.
Yeah, you know? Guaranteed, I think.
Guaranteed.
Yeah.
In that franchise. Listen, I have my niece's husband is a Giants fan, and she's... And by the way, he's an ex-Marine who is, you know, like, I mean, a hardcore dude, right? I wouldn't mess with... She's a big Eagles fan, and she just, you know, eggs him the whole time, right? One time... I guess it was the year after the Eagles won the Super Bowl, and we started off kind of slow and sluggish. And then we're playing the Giants. They're winning, like, it was like 21 or 24 to 6 at halftime. And the Eagles came back and won. And then we started to pick it up, right? He burnt every one of his Giants jerseys, everything, right on Facebook. and you know, we beat the Giants. So, I mean, but it's still, listen, it's the NFL and you got to think, okay. And what about our D-backs?
I don't know. We have to get through some injuries.
Yeah.
And did Bradbury, any word on Bradbury's injury?
I haven't seen anything about it since. I don't know if they figured out what's going on.
Or he looked like he was playing like he was injured at a minimum.
Yeah.
Well, you just got to hope, obviously, you know, we cure up in the next couple of weeks. We come back. We need that. And I'm even glad it's Monday night at this point. They got the Kelce... Yeah, Monday Night Football, that's going to be all the hype. So we'll see what happens. Great to be 8-1, but we've won in some of the craziest ways.
Well, I think Howie Roseman's 8-1. The coaching is probably 4-5 at this point.
Yeah.
We won on pure talent.
You're winning because of the people that you
pure
have
on talent.
The team.
But if you don't have
A.J. Brown making impossible catches all the time. Mm-hmm.
And the yards after catch.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
And you know what's weird? I mean, A.J. Brown, he doesn't look fast. Like, I'm looking at him, right? He's not only fast, he runs great patterns. And, man, he knows how to shield the ball. Like, I mean, in other words, those touchdowns that he scored last week, I mean, there was nothing thrown behind him. He reaches up. He's making incredible catches. And if you're one-on-one with him, it's like, you know, going up for a rebound with basketball. Like, in other words, he's coming down with that rebound.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's pretty cool. We'll see what happens. You know, I mean, I'm cautiously optimistic. 8-1. By the way, this is Philadelphia radio we're on, right?
Yeah.
So it's typical, right, I guess, of us. But, I mean, I'm not the only one that thinks, okay, we got to clean some things up, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And it's funny because I kind of look forward to the bye week so I don't have to tailgate.
Oh, yeah. Larry's got the biggest tailgate going. By the way, gentlemen, I try to get into that tailgate. He always says, you know, for me to, you know, stop by, and I always do. Can't get past security. There's these two guys there, and I hear things like, oh, it's him, get him. And I'm like, I know. He's always, you know, turning around. I'm like, brutal. So let's get into a little bit into business. Jeff, I bet you think I don't know anything about your specialty at the law, but I know a little bit about it, okay? And so in essence, let's go over a scenario, right?
Sure.
Okay. And there's a coverage issue. Talk about that. Give us, you know, a sort of a scenario where you might come in and say that the insurance company is denying something.
Sure. So can really arise in a couple of different scenarios. There's kind of two different arenas, I guess I would say. One is a first party bad faith action, and then there's third party bad faith. First party is where you have a claim against your own insurance company. So you're injured in an accident, you make a claim to your own insurance company for either, I guess let me back all the way up. Do you know what uninsured, underinsured motorist coverage is?
Hmm. You don't have to get them because you can bundle and Liberty Bibbity will... I'm sorry. Did Flo... let me just start off by saying... Flo doesn't mention, you know, underinsured.
It's true. And that's really because it's so state specific, really. So in Pennsylvania in particular, you have something called uninsured or underinsured motorists. Uninsured protects you in a scenario where you get into an accident with somebody that doesn't have insurance, or like a hit and run scenario. There's no tortfeasor to bring an action against because either they're uninsured or you have no idea who they are.
You have no idea, right, exactly.
So you can purchase coverage that protects you in that situation, and you can buy, you know, limits up to whatever your own liability limits are. Underinsured motorist is similar, although it protects you where the tortfeasor, the at-fault party's limits are insufficient to, you know, fully compensate you for your injuries. So in Pennsylvania, the minimum amount of money you need to go, you know, drive your vehicle legally is only $15,000. If you're really hurt in an accident, $15,000 isn't going to go very far. So you can then, you know, get that money from the tortfeasor and then go against your own insurance company for underinsured motorist coverage up to whatever your limits are. So first party bad faith is when you bring that type of an action against your own insurance company or bring a claim, you know, if they, you know, sort of the typical scenario would be a denial, but in reality, bad faith can arise from, you know, bad claims handling, unreasonable delays. You know, there's lots of different scenarios where an insurance carrier might not address your claim properly. And really where this comes from is that unlike a tort scenario where the insurance company is representing the at-fault party, in a first-party action where you're bringing the case against your own insurance company, you have a contract with them. You've paid them premiums. And so there's a implied duty of good faith and fair dealing that arises from that contract.
So you're – so you're focusing on the actual insured, the company, the individual whose insurance company is supposed to. So my insurance company, I hit somebody and they're not covering me.
Well, so you're bringing, if you're injured in an accident, it's sort of assuming that the tortfeasor, the person who's at fault, that claim's done. So now you're bringing a claim against your own insurance company. And even if it were to go into a suit, right, if you had to file a lawsuit, the action wouldn't be, you know, Joe against, you know, tortfeasor, you know, Bob Smith, it would be Joe against whatever insurance company you have.
Right.
And so, you know, that really arises from this contractual obligation that the insurance company has to treat you fairly. You pay them money every month or every 6 months or a year, whatever your arrangement is. They have an obligation to treat you fairly. And I mean, just sort of the practical reality, a lot of insurance adjusters don't see paying you money for your claim as their job. They see it as, you know, finding a way to, you know, diminish the value of your claim in some way.
Now, does that, and Brent, Ben, does that happen a lot, I guess, when somebody doesn't have, you know, representation? So in other words, you know, I'm trying to handle it myself. I call my insurance company and, of course, I'm not going to know much about, you know, my policy and, you know, just maybe what's on the surface. Well, what in that, I mean, is that make sense or did they, do they try to take advantage of people who are trying to handle their own claims?
Oh, they do all the time. Like, especially in a third party claim, if, you know, the insurance company is normally going to reach out within, you know, the first couple of weeks to try to buy you off, you know. They'll give you. I just had it happen recently. I had a woman who I was treating, and her doctor said that she was looking for representation. You know, and I spoke with her, and you know, she was a little embarrassed, but it turns out she'd already signed the claim away for like $1,400 or something. And it probably could have been like a $25,000 case when all of a sudden.
A friend of mine accepted. He was going. When he got an attorney, he could have got, you know, it was a massive case, but he accepted all the coffee he could drink for a year. You know who I'm talking about?
That was named Cosmo?
Yes. It was Kramer. And who was his lawyer? Jackie Childs?
Jackie Childs.
Yeah. Remember that?
They're real and they're spectacular. Yeah.
Who told you to send him that claim?
It's the balm.
So let's talk about... you know, the point of an accident then, because this takes me to that point. Okay, first of all, kind of, we can almost back up because first off, a lot of people don't even know what kind of coverage they have, right? So in a sense, if you're at least talking about uninsured and underinsured coverage, okay, you got at least somewhere to start. You know, if they're screwing you out of it, you know, they're at least screwing you out of something you have that you should have. That's when you bring, you know, obviously good attorneys in. But let's talk about that insurance coverage right at the beginning. How many people don't really know what insurance coverage they have?
Absolute majority. Yeah. I mean, and it's unfortunate because this is such an important thing. Having good coverage. But most people don't have any idea what kind of coverage or what they need until, frankly, it's too late. They've been involved in the accident, and then they're meeting with someone like Ben or someone like myself, who's then explaining, you know, we're looking at your declarations pages and explaining, you know, well, you know, in exchange for us, you know, reduced premium, you gave up your rights to a whole bunch of, you know, coverage that you could have had.
And the fact is that what Go ahead, Ben.
Well, yeah, I mean, and all the insurance companies are competing on price. You know, that's their selling point. That's the number one marketing point. You know, as well, we'll be, you know, any other company's price, you know, choose your own, whatever it is. They're not talking about the coverage. They're not talking about the product that they're going to provide you, you know. And when you meet with an agent, the agent is trying to underwrite a policy. They're trying to get it sold. And they do that by giving you basically the least coverage possible because it'll give you the best price. And people look at that and they think of insurance as like an obligation that they have to maintain, right, in order to drive, as opposed to something that will protect them in the long run if they get into a situation where they're injured.
Even the way people refer to it, I hear it all the time. Someone comes in and they said, I have full coverage.
I was just going to say, don't worry. Yeah.
I have full coverage, right.
You know,
and what they're really referring to there is, and the agent has told them, you're fully covered. You got full coverage. That's from the liability standpoint. That's, do I legally comply with Pennsylvania's requirements of insurance? That's not, hey, how am I going to protect myself, my family, if I get into an accident and the person that struck me is, you know, also has minimum coverage.
Well, how many people we talk about, you know, in the city of Philadelphia, okay, who you know, how, I mean, I don't know if we actually know the actual number, but how many people are underinsured or have no insurance?
No insurance.
Yeah. No, honestly, the vast majority, I would say. More often than, I mean, a statement in my policy, like Jeff was saying, is $15,000 in third-party liability coverage. A lot of people have that. So you have to be anticipating what the other party is probably going to have when you're making your own decisions, you know, because I'll see people who have uninsured motorist and underinsured motorist, but they're limited to it, right? You know, and then they get hurt and they've got all this policy available to them, but you then have to establish that the injuries breach that threshold, right? That you suffered death, you know, disfigurement, serious, you know, bodily injuries, substantial impairment of a bodily function, right? And it's this weird grayscale, and a lot of times on the third party side, they're just going to fight you to death on it. You know, they're not under any obligation to you in their dealings with you. So, you know, the best way to protect yourself going forward, and the best way to make the claims process a lot easier, is just to get the right coverage from the outset, so that you are protected, you're taken care of.
To answer your question, Joe, I looked it up. So the Insurance Research Council, which is actually based out of Malvern, in 2021 did a study. 13% of motorists, so 1 in 8 drivers nationwide, is uninsured. Wow. So 1 in 8 people, as you're driving around here, doesn't have insurance. And so it's really important to make sure that you have coverage in that scenario. And another thing I see, and frankly, you know, UMUIM, which is short for uninsured, underinsured, is very important. But additionally, full tort versus limited tort. You know, there's effectively two types of damages that you can claim in a personal injury action. You have economic damages and non-economic damages. So economics, it's what it sounds like. It's lost wages, outstanding medical bills, future cost of medical care. Those types of things are economic losses that you suffered as a result of your injuries. You can't work because you know, you're hurt. Non-economic damages are things like pain and suffering, loss of life's pleasures, essentially suing for the things that you were able to do before the accident that you're no longer able to do as a result of your injuries. So in Pennsylvania, we have this scheme where in exchange for a lower premium, you can get what's called limited tort option. And so you sign a form that really the form lays it out, but what a lot of people look at is they tell you what the cost is for full tort and what the cost is for limited tort, and they elect whatever the cheaper option is, not knowing that you've now given up your right to sue for those non-economic damages, that pain and suffering, loss of life's pleasures, embarrassment, humiliation, all those things. You've given up that right unless you've sustained what's really the major one is, there's lots of exceptions, but the one that's usually litigated is serious impairment of a body function. You need to be really hurt in order to pierce that limited tort threshold.
Sometimes they tell you that there's a threshold, right? You said, oh, don't worry if you're hurt. And, you know, if you're really hurt, you won't have to worry about it because there's a threshold. There. What does that, like, in other words, it's I've had people tell one, an individual tell me that before. Okay. And what does that mean?
So really the issue there is, you know, if you have, I think one of the exceptions is like a compound fracture and things like that. If you have surgery, there are these, you know, an injury that people would think of as objectively, you know, a really, really serious injury. But in many cases, soft tissue injuries, an insurance company is not just going to agree that you've sustained a serious injury.
So they'll dispute things that they should, they probably shouldn't dispute.
You know, it's all a matter, you know, it's all sort of gray. There's no specific, how case law has interpreted what serious bodily injury means is really its impact on the person. It's not a list of injuries that specifically qualify. And so there's a lot of litigation surrounding that. But from a defense standpoint, insurance companies are absolutely going to look at that and use that to create risk for the client, create risk for the plaintiff's attorney, because if they can argue to a jury eventually that you're subject to the limited tort, that's just another issue that a plaintiff may lose on. Yeah. And, you know, once you've created that risk, they're always going to try to drive down the value of your case because there's this chance that even if they win on a plaintiff wins on liability, rear-end motor vehicle accident, a jury could still come back and say, well, we don't think that you pierced this limited tort threshold. We're giving you no money. And that's a serious risk for, you know, plaintiff's attorneys who work off of a contingency fee and things mm-hmm. like that. And insurance companies know that and try to take advantage of that.
Ben, when somebody gets in an accident, okay, let's talk about, because how this factors in, what first things that they should do, keeping in mind that there may be a situation where it's an underinsured or uninsured case. So they may get a call from their own insurance carrier, and now all of a sudden you have an adversarial situation where the company that, you know, you think you can say anything to or whatever, you know, because I've heard attorneys say to me, well, they'll ask you in a almost like a trap question, how you feeling? Somebody's like, you know, the regular person, I feel okay. You know, they have no idea how they feel. And then next day, but they'll hear that at the end, you know, potentially if they ever go to court, that, you know, they'll use that against them. What are the first things somebody should do and not do at the point of an accident?
Well, I mean, really the only thing that you should be talking with your insurance carrier about at the outset is property damage, right? You know, who's handling the property damage? Is your insurer going to take care of it? Is the third party insurer going to take care of it? Figure that out, right? But you really don't want to discuss injury status or anything like that until you have an attorney, and the attorney can speak with your personal injury protection adjuster about your injuries, about your medical treatment, all that kind of stuff. Because like you said, I mean, hypothetically in these insurance companies, everything is supposed to be compartmentalized, right? In order to avoid this conflict of interest, you've got your PIP adjuster who's handling your medical bills.
What's PIP?
Personal injury protection. It's mandatory coverage in Pennsylvania. In some states it's not, but in Pennsylvania,
they automatically give you $150,000, and they just lay that out there, right? Is that, no?
Well, in Pennsylvania, it's $5,000, right? Which is state mandatory minimum.
Would you get you about 6 months in the hospital, surgery, and all them? Oh, I'm sorry, $5,000.
Well, it'll give you 6 months with a chiropractor.
Yeah, right. Mac,
and it has not changed in 26 years.
Oh, yeah.
It's still been the same $5,000. So no cost of living increases. Nothing.
Yeah.
The interesting, and sort of in defense of that, one of the interesting things that a lot of people don't know, and I always tell my clients, because $5,000 doesn't sound like, you know, anything from a medical standpoint, but what you have to understand is that Pennsylvania's Act 6 amendments to the Motor Vehicle Financial Responsibility Law in the 90s basically said...
Hold on, I'll get that. Here's what they are. Go ahead, I'm sorry. That's a little above my pay grade.
Essentially, they created this scheme where if you, as a medical provider, are treating someone that's been involved in an accident, a motor vehicle accident specifically, you have to charge, you can only charge 110% of what Medicaid or Medicare would pay for that same treatment. So, you know,
you actually get more for your, almost more for the insurance?
You absolutely do. Medicaid, Medicare, MCARE doesn't pay very much for medical services. That's why a lot of, you know, medical providers don't necessarily want to take it. But first party medical benefits, they have to bill at that same, at 110% of the MCARE rate. And they're required by law to only bill that amount. There's a lot of argument that goes on, you know, in our arena with defense counsel. Well, was that Act 6? And you'll hear that if you're ever a plaintiff. Was that number Act 6? And what they really mean by that was it reduced pursuant to the law to comply with 110% of the MCARE rate?
But it does then. I mean, when you have a doctor's office, there's a lot of operational expenses that go into running a practice.
Sure.
Obviously, you've got administrative staff, you've got equipment, you've got to keep the lights on, all those things that go into it. So sometimes the amounts that they can wind up getting reimbursed by the auto insurance carrier are pretty insignificant, you know, when you consider what they're actually doing, you know, in each of those visits.
Well, not to mention the emergency room visit if you have to go there first, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And or ambulance, you know, EMS. That's wildly expensive.
By the way, is that Act 60?
So that's complicated. Generally, yes. If it's a level one trauma center, there's different rules. I mean, it's the law. There's always exceptions to the exception. But generally, yes, it would be Act 60.
But either way, what we're talking about is, and you're thinking about somebody, we're sitting in front of a broker or whatever, probably, you know, and not going over all these scenarios and being prepared. Because if I'm not incorrect, in other words, if you have the $5,000 pit, which as we know can get eaten up very quickly, you have your own personal health insurance is supposed to pick it. But if you have deductibles and all, they kick in, right?
Yeah, you have to pay copays and all of that. And you have to be with a doctor's office that participates with your primary health insurance. You know, and a lot of places don't. Just because of those issues that Jeff was talking about, some of the reimbursement rates are so low that, you know, it's just not worth it to them at the end of the day. So if, you know, one of the things that doctor's offices will do is what's called a letter of protection, right? Basically, it's as long as they know that there's third-party litigation involved, they'll continue to treat as long as, you know, their bills will be getting paid on the back end. And it's important. I mean, it's basically just an agreement between the patient and the practice that my personal injury protection benefits might have run out. We might have spent that $5,000. But I'm still hurt. I need additional diagnostic testing or additional treatment, injections or whatever it might be. And it's basically just a promise that we'll you know, reimburse that on the back end as long as I can continue to receive treatment now. But now, that all has to come out of the settlement, right? If you've got, you know, $6,000, $7,000 in outstanding medical bills and the person on the other side has a $15,000 policy, that money's got to come from somewhere and it's coming out of what you would otherwise be getting. So, you know, it's important.
I mean, but
again, to be properly insured.
And so let's talk about something that's a key factor in this process, the contingency fee agreement, which means that when somebody walks into your office, they're not taking cash out of their pocket and paying for that, you know, for your services, for your legal services. Now, which means that getting reimbursed as a doctor or a lawyer for your time only happens, you know, if you win.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about that, because it's a great equalizer for a client, okay? And a doctor, Larry, when, you know, I mean, the letter of protection is important when you have really good, reliable attorneys right there. It's a key factor, but ultimately speaking, you have to win the case, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Well, and that's why it runs the way that it does. You know, I mean, the standard contingent fee is about 33 1/3%, you know, 1/3 of the overall value of the settlement. And, you know, sometimes people think that might sound steep, but there's a risk. You know, there's a risk inherent in taking on this type of work, and you have to be able to evaluate it and know from the outset if it's a claim you're going to be able to work with.
Yeah, and expensive. You have to hire a lot of medical experts.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times, as well as other experts, to help prove your case. So if you don't win the case, you're out of pocket. The firm has lost that money.
Yeah, and absolutely. And that's absolutely a point that I think a lot of clients don't necessarily understand. And something that I try to explain to clients right up front is that, you know, in exchange for, you know, us not taking an hourly fee from you, you know, we're fronting our time. I'm fronting my staff's time. I'm fronting the costs of the case. And just getting your medical records can be relatively, you know, expensive. If you went to the ER, I mean, there's pages and pages and pages of just your, you know, what your blood pressure was and, you know, doing tox screens and all that kind of stuff. It's relatively expensive. And if you get into litigation and you need to do depositions, you're having to get, you know, life care planning experts, you're having to get, you know, different medical experts, you might need a vocational, an economist. I mean, it really does start to add up, and we take on the risk of that litigation because, like Larry said, we take that case all the way to trial, and for whatever reason you lose, you know, the firm's just out that money. That's just part of doing business.
Right, and to me, though, it's really what it's man, it's I get the goosebumps thinking about you. How long somebody's cases they could last a while? I mean, the insurance companies, no matter how obvious a case is, are not just rolling over just because you have a great attorney and saying, you know what, we're just going to pay up right now. I mean, they'll hold on as long as they possibly can before. I mean, so in other words, these things can last a while, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, especially with, COVID was a nightmare for everybody who was involved because you had all these cases, beforehand that had already been filed. They were pending in litigation, and then COVID hit and everything stopped. And then, but people were still filing cases, right? Things were still happening and statutes of limitations were still coming up. So you had to get things filed. So the court system, they managed to kind of get everything caught up as far as the cases that were filed after 2020. But then the cases that had been filed before 2020 kind of wound up getting bumped on the back end. So there are cases now that were filed in 2019, 2018 that are finally getting their day in court, and here we are 5 years later.
Yeah.
And I think they've done a really good job of making the court system a lot more efficient, especially in Philadelphia. For as much as Philadelphia might do wrong as, on the governmental level, the court system has actually done a really fantastic job of creating this efficient case management system that's kind of the envy of the state, to be honest.
It is. And being able to do things remotely, sitting from my office is just, the days of going and waiting for the cattle call in discovery court are over. I mean, it's really pretty nice just being able to hop on, a Zoom call and be able to resolve, motions and things like that and how Philadelphia handles it.
Are trials back to normal? In other words, are you back doing the trials in person?
Yes.
I heard we heard an attorney come on one time talk about, because there was some situations where they were doing trials a while back before everything was back. They were doing trials by Zoom, and somebody was doing a closing, and they were in the middle, if not towards the end of this great closing, and they felt great about it, and then they realized the monitor went off of one person, and they had to make a major decision on that. But other than that, technology has kind of kicked in, right? I mean, when you talk about, Zoom and a lot of the, how about depositions? A lot of those situations still sticking around.
Oh yeah, every now and then I have an in-person deposition, but for the most part, they're done remotely. We do a lot of, mediations, arbitrations, things like that remotely, especially from a plaintiff standpoint where I'm not billing my time hourly. Being able to do it remotely is fantastic. I think there's kind of maybe a little bit of a disconnect there. I think a lot of defense firms, being able to sit at your desk and work on multiple files throughout a day is great, but you have to realize that sort of our job as plaintiff's lawyers is to be as absolutely efficient as I can be with that file. I'm trying to do as good of a job as I possibly can, as quickly as I can, and with touching that file as few times as possible. If you're billing your time, you're, as a most defense attorneys
defense
do,
attorney, right.
You might have a different motivation, let's say, than a plaintiff's attorney may. So that travel time, if you're being reimbursed for that, may be something that is missed there.
I do still, with the depositions, though, there are still the ones that I make sure we do in person, though.
Oh, and I like to bring my client in and be with me.
Well, you would think that, the deposition process, and I don't mean doctors, okay, but being right in front of somebody, you would at least think that a defense firm would, much prefer that. Like, trying to get somebody to get in somebody's face or whatever, intimidate them, whatever. But my point is it, do you find that they get pushback from doing depositions with clients on that? Or is the industry totally different?
I think the industry has changed some. You have carriers that don't want to pay for your travel time. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's the reality of it. And you have, I think I'm finding, and I don't know if you're finding this also, but I do see sometimes defense counsel wants to take an in-person deposition of the plaintiff. Witnesses, other people like that, they might say, we'll just do it by remotely, that's fine, but would want to see the, sit across the table probably for the reasons.
Speaks to credibility possibly?
Yeah. But I'd say that's still less than 50% of the cases. Most of them are being done remotely right now.
Well, so, and on many of them, it is very efficient. It's nice to be able to do it remotely, and it doesn't take very long. If you're just going to be deposing someone for 20 minutes, you know, or if it's a police officer in an accident case and they just wrote the report and you just want to get their memories about, you know, what they observed at the accident scene, things like that, you know, they don't have an emotional investment in it, right? But in other cases, if it's a bigger case, if you're dealing with a medical malpractice issue or something, if you're basically trying to, you know, get a professional to understand that they may not have met the standard, you know, in this particular, so you got to get them outside of their comfort zone. You know, if somebody's sitting on their couch or they're sitting in their own office and they're just looking at a computer screen, I think it's a lot easier for them to keep their defenses up. When you're in a room with someone, you know, it's a lot easier to evaluate the person, and there's a certain kind of atmosphere that you have to create in order to, you know, kind of break somebody down a little bit sometimes.
And when I think about it, Larry, I just can't see Tom Cruise talking to Jack Nicholson with masks on, and you know, I want the truth.
And the cat filter. Right.
On Zoom. It probably, you know, the scene probably would lose some effect. Let's talk a little bit about the firms, okay? Ben, you would mention, obviously, the Fino Law Associates. Obviously, a very community-based firm. I mean, right in the heart of South Philly, and you know, you probably could have got some work done yesterday and walked right over to the game. You could definitely do that.
I wasn't doing any work yesterday.
I know, but I'm just saying. talk about that community, appeal and how important it's been to the firm. Because I mean, you guys are right and the firm has been around quite a long time. And so, that connection to the community is important.
Yeah, it's great. I didn't really know much about South Philly. I thought that anything south of South Street was South Philly, quote unquote, before I started working down there. And I was, when we moved into the city in 2009, we originally lived in, Center City, Rittenhouse Square area. It was beautiful. It was great. But when it came time to buy something, we, you know, had to move outside of that area, and we went to South Philly, and I started working with these guys around the same time, and it's just a whole different world down there.
Yeah, it is.
But it's also very tight, you know. I mean, it's like Philadelphia as a whole. People might badmouth it on the inside, you know, amongst each other. But then if anybody from the outside does, you don't come after them, you know.
That's right.
And it's a great place to work, though, because the people are very hospitable. You know, it's a very blue collar.
Real.
Yeah, they're very real and very authentic.
And the trust factor and having those lifelong relationships.
There's a lot of loyalty. Yeah, people, we have families that, you know, and like I said, we do a lot of stuff. We try to take care of, you know, help you out with whatever it is you might need. So we'll have somebody come in on an accident case, you know, and handle that for them. But then their aunt wants to get her will done. And
right.
We do those too, you know, and they come in, we'll set up your will, and if somebody passes, we'll handle the estate for you. And, you know, if somebody gets a DUI, we'll defend you.
Somebody does pass, you could refer them to one of the funeral homes that are within 50 yards.
We got like three funeral homes right on my block.
Well, it's funny because we watched the game at 15th and Porter yesterday.
Yeah.
So literally, I drove right past the firm on the way down there. I swore I was never going to get parking that, you know, because it's a 4 o'clock game. It's Dallas. Might as well be, you know, a playoff game, right? And I end up parking at 19th and Porter. So I walked a few blocks.
Yeah.
Of course, my wife did, and I had to drop her off and then hitchhike get back to from where I was.
I know it well.
No question. It's a very community-oriented area, and having that history and that trust factor, because when you pick an attorney, okay, you may only do it once in your life. And so many people don't know the questions to ask. Talking about, you know, the resources. Jeff, talk about your firm and talk a little bit about the type of firm you guys are, the culture at the firm.
Sure. I mean, I think Ben hit it on the head. I mean, I think that the biggest compliment that you can get as an attorney is, you know, a former client referring you a family member. I mean, the fact that the level of trust that that shows in what you did for them, and not even a current client, you know, a former client that you've completely resolved their case, them having that confidence in you that you're going to be able to take care of that family member is just one of the biggest compliments that you can possibly get. You know, we've been around for, you know, different sort of iterations of HGSK for a lot of years, very, very involved in, you know, a number of different communities. We've got offices in Allentown, Reading, Hazleton, Kennett Square, Lancaster, and then our personal injury practice is headquartered out of Philadelphia, but our workers' compensation department is headquartered out of our Reading and Allentown offices. But very, very involved in the local communities where we are, and, you know, really take pride in being lawyers for the people. You know, that's something that, you know, differentiates lawyers like Ben and myself, is that we really do, you know, you represent people and you get to know your clients and the really, you know, the impacts that these injuries have on, you know, their lives, their work life, their family, and to really, I think, really understand your client's case and be able to present that to an insurance company. You need to really have an understanding of what your client's going through, and fundamentally the only way to really do that is to go, you know, meet with them, see them, talk to their family. I mean, that's just the reality of doing what we do.
And interesting enough, one of the things people never, most people, I can't even imagine, would think about, is, and when you have established firms like your firms, is having the resources to get the witnesses when necessary, never have to compromise. Okay, a lot of people, somebody's cousin Bill's, you know, friend Bob is an attorney, right? Okay, and it doesn't mean that they're not a good attorney or you know, but, you know, they don't often know what the, you know, the success points are of that firm. I mean, communications, okay? I'm sure, you know, those are priorities. In I always say that you could have an attorney who's number one in his or her class, but if they aren't good communicators and there's no how important is that when it comes to your clients? And I do want to finish up on the resources. You need to have the resources to be able to compete with these big, you know, insurance companies. And if that's a question, I'm sure a lot of people don't think about because they just assume, you know, that, you know, a lawyer is a lawyer, right? I mean, that's nothing could be further from the truth. Talk about that.
Well, yeah, you have to invest everything that you need to into each case in order to make it work. I mean, some cases are a lot more discreet, you know, and involve one issue where you need one expert, one doctor in one particular field to help explain what happened and all of that. But then some cases you're dealing with a number of disciplines. You need 3-4 different doctors. You need an economist. You know, you need maybe a liability expert in an accident case to explain why something didn't live up to a certain industry standard or was defective, you know, even though to the layperson it might not originally appear that way. So you have to have the confidence in the cases that you're doing. That's part of the vetting process. Like, we, unfortunately, sometimes, you know, bad things happen and there isn't much that you can do about it from a legal perspective. But if there is a way to hold a responsible party accountable for something bad that happened to somebody, we'll investigate and find every way to do that. And then it's a matter of resource in the case like you were talking about. I mean, we had a medical malpractice case that I settled recently that, and this wasn't even one of the, you know, outrageous, $24,000 we invested in it, you know, and you have to be confident in the work that you're doing to invest that kind of money into it. But then you have to invest that kind of money into it in order to succeed on the case.
Absolutely.
So,
and you can't be operating out of fear. And right. I think that's that being a part of a firm that has the resources, you can't be in a position that you're unwilling to roll the dice and take a case to trial. You can't be operating from a position of fear of not getting your money back. You need to be willing to move forward.
And by the way, that's not something a client would see. You know what I mean? And that's why it's so important to obviously have the background. The communication, okay? I once had an injured worker call, and, you know, it was a union worker, and we have an injured workers program, and they had usually they'll utilize their own union attorneys, you know, And but this person, you know, they, you know, they she had another attorney from a year ago, but the injury started to reoccur. So we called that attorney just to let her know that the woman called the injury, program, and that person was stressed out of their mind and leaving town. Okay, my point is, because she couldn't get in touch with them. How important is that, you know, that culture, that demeanor, and the communication level, the client and the the client and the lawyer relationship and the success.
You know, I talk to my clients usually about this right up front. You know, I will be as accessible as you need me to be. You know, and sort of it runs the gamut in term. And I'm sure Ben has a similar experience. I have some clients that, you know, you talk to them, you know, and maybe they'll check in by email every couple of months and want some update. And my staff's really, you know, very good at staying, you know, in contact with the clients. Frankly, that's part of, you know, working up a personal injury case is you need to updates from your client, make sure they're getting appropriate medical treatment. They're being compliant with their medical treatment. I'm sure Larry has a lot of experience with non-compliant patients.
Sure, sure.
But you know, I absolutely have clients that want basically a scheduled monthly, like, hey, let's talk once a month. Let me know what's going on with the case. And
makes sense.
We try to accommodate as much as we possibly can. I mean, there are certainly clients that...
Well, I was trying to call you yesterday at 4:45, right at kickoff. Ben, you know, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think one of the most important parts of the job is being able to remember what people might not know, right? We work in this space every day. So there's legal concepts and principles and personal injury protection, like you were saying. Like these are things that we deal with every day. And you have to remember that a lot of people don't. They have no reason to,
right?
So it's a matter of really sitting down from the outset and having that initial conversation with the person about their case, about the way that you're going to investigate it, about the way that you're going
setting
to litigate
up
it if you have to.
Setting up expectation on the ebbs and flows, because these things don't typically
But also just helping them, the more that they understand about their process and the more that they understand about the situation that they're in, the more it puts their mind at ease. You know, once they know that their only responsibility is really to themselves to make sure that they treat their injuries to the extent that they need to, that they get better, and that everything else will be taken care of for them, right?
And Larry, we talked about, we got about 2 minutes left, but obviously have medical professionals, obviously compliance. Talk about that, the network of professionals.
So a lot of times I'm with the friends of mine who are attorneys, and they speak to other attorneys, and they speak about the awards that certain attorneys get. And sometimes I'm there in the meetings, and the attorneys that are not getting the same type of awards, you know, they ask questions to the attorneys that have been more successful. And one of the things that we realized is that most patients that are injured that do not have a firm that works in this space will say, just go to your primary care physician.
Oh, yeah.
Which is absolutely not what you really want to do, because at the end of the day, this is not what they do. They treat flus and bruises and cuts. They're not medical providers that will give not only the proper treatment but also the proper documentation, so their attorneys have something to fight your battles for you. So a lot of times they won't get diagnostic tests that are also crucial to the case. So what I've realized over the years is that there are specific doctors, whether they are chiropractors, pain management doctors, orthopods, that really specifically deal in workman's comp, auto accidents. So they know what the attorneys need. They know what the patients need to get better. So it's really about outcomes, not only for your personal, but also for, you know, for your case.
And having said that, a network of diverse, you know, so if
yes.
you have a neurologist, pain management.
We right now have over 200 doctor's offices that are everything from every type of medical, you know, specialty you can find, whether it's pain management, whether it's ortho, neurology, podiatric surgeons, you name it, we have everything covered in seven states, actually.
And there's no out-of-pocket, you know, it's the same
nope.
exact... Let's do this. Let's go around the horn. We got less than a minute. Contact information at the firm?
Sure. Yeah, we're DeFino Law Associates. Website is at thephillyfirm.com. We're down at Broad and Shunk in South Philadelphia. You can walk to Citizens Bank Park at the end of the day. Go catch a Phillies game
in
the summertime.
Fantastic.
And 215-551-9099. Give us a call. We'll help you out.
Absolutely. Jeff Stanton?
So again, Jeff Stanton, Haggerty, Goldberg, Schleifer, and Coopersmith. We go by HGSK. Our Philadelphia office is 1801 Market Street. If your insurance company, if it won't pay, give me a call. We can certainly try to help you out. You can reach me at 267-350-6600.
Absolutely. Larry Schreiber?
Larry Schreiber, Bridge Med Legal, 609-332-0428.
All right. I want to thank everybody for tuning into the Legal Show here on WWDB Talk 860. Obviously, we want to thank Ben Simmons, Jeff Stanton, and, of course, Larry Schreiber for making it all happen. It's been a fantastic launch show, gentlemen. Really appreciate your time. Thank Tyler in the producer's booth. On behalf of everybody on the broadcast, I'm Joe Dougherty. Thanks for listening, everybody.